You may not know this, but we have elders who pray every Sunday morning just for you and for the service. They come early and they pray at least an hour, hour and a half, and then they pray for whoever preaches every Sunday, and they've been doing this for years. And they came and asked how they could pray for me this morning, and I said, well, it's amazing how God is sovereign. He orchestrated this message this morning because it's about multi-generational faithfulness, of passing on a spiritual heritage and legacy to your kids and grandkids, etc. And it's amazing how God works, because I didn't orchestrate any of this. I'm just preaching through a book like I normally do. We're just going through Hebrews, and it just so happened to fall on this Sunday, which we had an infant baptism earlier in the 9:30 service, so we talked a lot about that. And then we have VBS coming this week. So you're going to hear a lot from me about the importance of teaching children and grandchildren the faith and the biblical principles of the faith. And I just want to first thank many of you who are going to serve this week. I think we have close to 90 volunteers. So many of you are, what I would say, putting your money where your mouth is whenever you make a commitment when we baptize a child, that you're going to help raise these children in the Lord, help them parents. And so thank you ahead of time for being a part of this really important week. It's one of our biggest weeks of the year, and many of you are going to help make this happen. So thank you ahead of time. It's going to be a sweet, sweet time. Please turn to Hebrews 11. We're going to talk about multi-generational faithfulness this morning, and the faith that was instilled in Abraham that was then passed to his son Isaac, then Jacob, then Joseph. So Hebrews 11, verses 20 through 22 is where we find ourselves in this wonderful letter. Hebrews 11, verse 20 says, "By faith, Isaac invoked future blessings on Jacob and Esau. By faith, Jacob, when dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph, bowing in worship over the head of his staff. And by faith, Joseph, at the end of his life, made mention of the exodus of the Israelites and gave directions concerning his bones. The grass withers and the flowers fall, but the word of the Lord stands forever." For those of you that like American history, you go back to the early years of the Pilgrims and the Puritans, and there was a man who was the leader of this group. His name was William Bradford, and when he got here to the colonies, he wrote in a journal, and it's now called of Plymouth Plantation. It's a journal that anybody can read, and as he was processing just the journey that they went on from Holland all the way to this new land of the Americas, he wrote these words in reflection as he was in New York. He said, "We cherish a great hope and an inward zeal of laying good foundations for the advance of the gospel of the kingdom of Christ to the remote parts of the earth, even if we should be but stepping stones to others in the performance of so great a work." As he was reflecting on his life and the journey that they had just taken, going through the Atlantic from Holland to New York, he was reflecting on how many people had lost their lives, how they had left a place of comfort, per se, of a home that they were in, to a new home that was unknown and foreign to them, and how they got there with little to their name. And again, many died, many barely survived. But he was saying, "I hope that one day those after me will experience blessing." Because we're experiencing blessing just being able to worship the Lord freely, but we're living like nomads and sojourners on this new land that God has brought us to. As I was thinking about William Bradford, I was thinking about Abraham and how there's a very similar thing between the two of them, a comparison when you compare the two of them. Just like William Bradford left a home and went into a whole new place that was unknown, Abraham did the same thing. And God had promised Abraham that not only would he be given this new land that they would settle, but he would also have a descendant, and then descendants after that son, and then descendants after those grandsons, and it would just continue on, this generation of faithfulness, a legacy that would be instilled in Abraham and then passed on to generations to come. And as I was thinking about this promise that God gave to Abraham that we discussed last week, there's a great book called Visionary Parenting. And Rob Reinow, he wrote these words about Abraham. He said, "Abraham was on an adventure of faith. It was a multi-generational adventure. This adventure of faith was not simply for him, just as your faith is not simply for you. Faith is not just a personal thing, as many people say. God did not design it that way. God designed faith to be infectious, to spread primarily and most powerfully through the family tree, from parent to child, to grandchild, to great-grandchildren. God chose Abraham to start a worldwide movement of faith and blessing, and it would happen through his family. So we learned about that last week when God promised this blessing upon him and future generations to come. And in the same way, we see that these future generations would be blessed, just as Abraham was. We're going to talk this morning about Isaac, about Jacob, and Joseph, and how they had the same faith that was given to their father, grandfather, great-grandfather, Abraham, and they were to continue on this legacy of faith as they had children and passed it down the line. And as I reflected on these three men, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph, I was thinking a lot about Abraham, and how they had the same kind of faith, and it was a forward-looking faith. And there's two things that we're going to focus on with these three men in particular this morning. And that is, first, a future-looking faith helps us anticipate what's to come. And second, a future-looking faith helps us finish well. So again, a future-looking faith will help us anticipate what's to come, and a future-looking faith will help us finish well. So we start by talking about the faith of Isaac. And Isaac, we see in verse 20, by faith he invoked future blessings on Jacob and Esau. And just as his father Abraham had this future-looking forward faith, he too had this future-looking faith, and it helped him anticipate what was to come, not just his own heavenly home, and that's why he lived like a sojourner, just as his father lived, like a pilgrim in a land, but he also had a future-looking forward faith that anticipated what's to come for his children and grandchildren. He wanted them to have better opportunity. He wanted them to advance. He wanted them to have greater blessings as the time went on, and that's why he invoked these future blessings on his two sons, Jacob and Esau. Now, before we move on, many of us have met people who've died, whether they've been related to us or friends or what co-workers that have faced death and they've died. And most people, when they face death, they tend to look back on their lives. They tend to reflect on their lives. They think about the mistakes they made. They think about what they could have done and should have done. They have regrets. They think about the bucket list they were never able to accomplish. They might even think about something they should have said. We all want do-overs. And when you approach the end of your life, it's as if you're looking back and you say, I wish I could have done that over. But what we see in these three men in particular is that they weren't looking back as they reached the end of their lives. They were looking forward. And that's what God is calling each of us to do. As we continue to age and as we get closer to heaven, every day we wake up is one day closer to heaven, by the way. Every day we wake up is one day closer to heaven, however old you are. Just think about that point, that as we wake up every day, we're getting closer to heaven. And instead of looking back and saying, oh, I wish we would have done that. I wish, you know, yesterday ended last night. Today's a new day. We are called to look forward. And Isaac was looking forward. He wasn't on his deathbed looking back. He was looking ahead. And as a result, he was blessing his two sons, Jacob and Esau. Now, to go back to Genesis with all three of these individuals, you'll have to go back to Genesis and learn about these blessings, because blessings was important for these people to do back in the day. And Isaac, we know, he was 40 years old when he met Rebekah, his wife. They were 40, and she was having trouble conceiving and giving and having a child. And one day he prayed to the Lord, please, Lord, have a child, because we want to continue on this promise and this blessing that you gave to our father Abraham. And as a result of his prayer, God heard his prayer and answered his prayer. And Rebekah didn't have one, but she had twins. She had a set of twins. And if you remember the story in Genesis, for those of you that read it and remembered it growing up, these two boys were wrestling inside her womb. Now, I remember when Stephanie had children, the kids started kicking. It was really uncomfortable when the kids start kicking and you'd feel the foot, you know, kicking. Imagine two, and some of you have had twins. You know, two kids just kicking, and they're wrestling and jostling and struggling with one another. And she's asking the question while these boys are fighting each other in her womb. She's saying, why is this happening? And then we see in Genesis 25, the Lord came to her, and he said, two nations are in your womb, and two peoples from within you shall be divided. The one shall be stronger than the other. The older shall serve the younger. So right here, before these boys were even born, there was a prophecy from God saying, one day, the younger will be greater than the older. That was rare in these days. Normally, the oldest son would receive the birthright or the blessing. But in this case, God had other plans, and he said, the younger will be greater than the older. So they knew this before the boys were even born. And I would imagine Rebecca told her husband Isaac this information, because that's important information. Hey, honey, I just heard from the Lord, and Jacob is actually going to be greater than Esau. But when these boys were born, Isaac, the father, he seemed to ignore this prophecy, didn't he? And he was slow to give the blessing to the younger son because he was fonder of the older son. He kind of favoritized the older son. He liked Esau more than he did Jacob, and he wanted to give the blessing to the older son and not the younger one. But instead of reasoning with her husband, Rebecca decided to trick her husband. And again, this you may have learned the story years ago, but Esau was a man of the field. He was a hunter and gatherer. He was very hairy guy. Probably had a hairy back, just very hairy, and his arms everywhere. And he was out hunting, and he smelled like the outside air. And you all in the summertime have kids that play outside, and they come in and you're saying, go take a shower. That's how Esau smelled all the time. But his dad grew fond of that because he said, my son's a man's man. He's out there hunting and gathering, and he's hairy, and I like him. Well, as the father grew older, he began to lose his eyesight, and he was nearly blind. And this is right as he's approaching death. He wants to bless his sons. And again, he's going to bless his older son. That was his plan. It wasn't God's plan, and he knew that, but he didn't care. He was going to bless his older son. And so Rebecca ended up dressing up Jacob, just as put on basically some clothes that Esau would wear, put on this animal skin with hair on the arms, and even had him smell like the outside air. And he went in before Esau, Jacob did, to be blessed by his aging blind father. And Jacob comes in the room, and Isaac asks, are you my son? And Jacob speaks, and he says, that doesn't sound like the voice of Esau, so come closer. And then he feels the arms of Jacob and says, well, you feel like you're very hairy like Esau. And then he says, oh, you even smell like the hunter that I know of Esau. And so let me go ahead and bless you, son. And of course, it wasn't Esau, it was Jacob. And we know in Genesis 27, the blessing that Isaac gave to Jacob, it said he came near and kissed him, and Isaac smelled the smell of his garments and blessed him and said, see, the smell of my son is as the smell of a field that the Lord has blessed. May God give you of the dew of heavens and of the fatness of the earth and plenty of grain and wine. Let people serve you and nations bow down to you. Be Lord over your brothers, and may your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be everyone who curses you, and blessed be everyone who blesses you. So what's he saying here? The father is blessing the younger son, Jacob, without knowing it. And he's saying, may God bless you, and may others serve you, and you'll be greater than your brother and all of his people after you. So Jacob receives a blessing. Isaac didn't realize this. Jacob leaves. Then in walks Esau. He's expecting to be blessed by his father. And he says, Dad, I'm here. And the dad says, Esau, I just blessed you, man. And the son says, no, Dad, that wasn't me. And of course, Isaac's probably horrified at this moment. Oh, shoot, I just blessed the wrong son. And so Esau says, well, bless me, Dad. And so Isaac blesses Esau, but it's not the same blessing. Genesis 27:39, then Isaac, his father, answered him and said, behold, away from the fatness of the earth shall your dwelling be, and away from the dew of heaven on high. By your sword ye shall live, and ye shall serve your brother. But when you grow restless, ye shall break his yoke from your neck. So he does bless both of them, just as Hebrews 11 told us that Isaac blessed both sons. But this blessing was not as good as the first blessing. He did say you'll be blessed. God will provide for you. But you're still going to serve your younger brother now. And of course, Esau is extremely upset. He's disappointed, and he wants to go and kill his brother because he's so angry. And as this happens, Isaac and Rebekah, they understood that their son was going to take revenge on his younger brother by killing him. And they said, Jacob, leave. Get out of here. Go to your uncle's house, your mom's brother's house, Laban. Genesis 28, and when he left, Isaac gives yet another blessing to Jacob, saying, God Almighty bless you and make you fruitful and multiply you, that you may become a company of peoples. May he give the blessing of Abraham to you and to your offspring with you, that you may take possession of the land of your sojournings that God gave to Abraham." Notice he says here, before he sends off his son that he just blessed, he blesses him again, and Isaac says, "May he give the blessing of Abraham to you and your offspring and take the land of Abraham as your own." What this tells me is Isaac had a forward-looking faith, and he anticipated what was to come. He anticipated that his son Jacob would be safe in Laban's house, and he anticipated that one day his son would return to the land, essentially, and he would be blessed, just as his father was blessed. A future-looking faith that was anticipating what was to come for his son Jacob. The other thing I want you to notice about Isaac here is that he had a future-looking forward faith that helped him to finish well. Now, I didn't mention this earlier, but true faith is not perfect. Praise be to God, because none of us are perfect. And we, for those of us who are believers, we have faith, but it ain't perfect. We struggle. Our faith, though, it can coexist side by side with sin. And Isaac, he was slow to give his son Jacob the blessing. And if you think about it, Isaac, Jacob, Esau, Rebekah, none of them really come out well in the story, do they? There's a lot of deceit and trickery. But it does end up working well in the end as the two brothers end up reconciling and meeting together, and Jacob continued the family blessing as was prophesied and promised. But what I like about Hebrews here is when it describes Isaac's faith, it doesn't talk about his shortcomings, but instead it talks about his faith. It talked about how he finished well and that his mind was on things to come, not only his heavenly home, but also for blessings for his future generations to come. And even though he had weak faith at times in his life, he still finished well. And as I think about Isaac, as I think about Jacob, as I think about Joseph, I think about you and me. And many people, when they age and when they get older, they don't finish well. They're looking back. I would encourage you, finish well. Stay the course. Don't spend and waste your time looking back on what if or I should have done this. Instead, look ahead. Here we see a man about to die. He's aged, he's probably hurting in pain because his body's aching, he's blind, he doesn't have a lot left to give, but boy, does he have a lot left to give. What do I mean by that? He blesses his son, and he says, "Now, son, you be a blessing to your sons so that they can be a blessing to their sons." He finishes well. Isaac not only finished well, but we know that Jacob finished well. And Jacob finished well because he too had a future-looking faith that helped him to anticipate what was to come. Look at Hebrews 11, verse 21. "By faith, Jacob, when dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph, bowing in worship over the head of his staff." This is really interesting here. If you go back to, again, Genesis chapter 48 now, you see Jacob, who was blessed by his father Isaac, who was blessed by his father Abraham. Now we get to Jacob. And he doesn't bless his son per se. Well, he does, but he also blesses his grandsons at this moment. If you think about Jacob, he had the privilege of knowing his grandsons. Manasseh and Ephraim were their names. And what was fascinating about the story, if you recall Genesis 48, Joseph had these two boys, Manasseh and Ephraim. The older son was named Manasseh, the younger was Ephraim. And Joseph wanted his father to bless the older son. Again, the older son should have received a bigger birthright and more blessing. And so what does he do? It's kind of crazy how these things are very similar, because you get to Isaac and now Jacob, and Jacob is older in years just as Isaac is, and Jacob is nearly blind just as Isaac was nearly blind at the end of his life. And Jacob is sitting on this chair, per se, in a room, and he's nearly blind. And in walks his two grandsons, and his son Joseph is saying, "Okay, Dad, I'm ready for you to give your blessing before you die for my sons, your grandsons. So normally, whenever an older man would bless his son or grandson, he would bless the older one with his right hand, because that would say this is a symbol of authority, and he's saying, "I'm going to bless you because you're going to be greater than your younger brother." And so Joseph brought his oldest son to the place of the right hand of Jacob, And the younger son, Ephraim, to the place of the left hand of Jacob. And he says, he's basically saying, Dad, I expect you to put your right hand on the older son and bless him more, and then put your left hand on the other son and bless him. But the older one's going to be greater. What does Jacob do? Whoop! He pulls a fast one. And he says, nope, I'm going to have my right hand in authority and bless the younger one. And I'm going to crisscross applesauce here. My left hand is going to be on the older one. And I'm going to bless them both, but the younger one will be greater than the older one. And this is what happens in Genesis 48, verse 15. He blessed Joseph and he said, the God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has been my shepherd all my life long to this day, the angel who has redeemed me from all evil, bless the boys. And in them let my name be carried on in the name of my fathers Abraham and Isaac. And let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. What's he saying here? He's saying, these boys are going to be blessed, but because my right hand is on the younger one, he's going to be more blessed. He's going to be greater than the older brother. And of course, Joseph, when he sees his dad do this, he's upset. He's saying, Dad, what in the world? That's not part of the plan. Why are you doing this? Why are you blessing the wrong son? But Jacob said to his son Joseph, no, the older will be blessed and he'll be great, but the younger will be greater and his offspring shall become a multitude of nations. You see here that God often, he chooses the least to be the greatest. He does things that are contrary to human convention. And this is what God intended. God intended for the older one to be more blessed, or the younger one to be more blessed than the older. And even as he faced death, Jacob, he anticipated what God would do in the future. And I want you to notice something that he said in his blessing to these grandsons. He said, the God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked. Now, you may not know this. I did some study this week. Did you know that the phrases, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, are mentioned 32 times in the Bible? 32 times. The God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Abraham, 32 times. Did you also notice, or have you ever noticed that the God of your fathers is a familiar phrase? It's mentioned 21 times. The God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph. So a total of 53 times is this phrase mentioned. So this phrase must be really important. And God knows that generational connection is a powerful influence in creating faith in children. So I was reading this book this week. It's called Visionary Parenting, Rob Reinow. I highly recommend it. He talks about this idea of having a vision for your children and your grandchildren and those who are far off, and what he does with his kids every now and then, because both he and his wife have parents who are Christians. When his kids go to bed, every now and then, he'll say a prayer over them, and he'll say, the God of Nana and Grandpa is your God, and God is blessing you. The same God of Nana and Grandpa is your God too. And he says, when my kids go off to college, I literally, with my wife, I give my kids a blessing and I say, as you go off to college, I pray that the God of Nana and Grandpa is your God as well, and you continue on this legacy. We just don't talk like that anymore, do we? It sounds kind of strange. I mean, could you imagine if your mom and dad start saying, well, the God of Nana and Poppy, we bless you. But this was normal in these days. And I think maybe it's something we could start doing. Every now and then, I wouldn't do it every prayer. That's kind of weird. But every now and then, just, hey, if you have parents that are of the faith, just as Nana and Pops, just as their God is our God Almighty, so is your God. So continue on this spiritual legacy that God has blessed us with. Now, I want you to imagine 100 years from now. You know, every generation is roughly 20 years. So that's 5 generations. 100 years from now is 5 generations. I want you to imagine 100 years from now, we aren't going to be here, but I just want you to picture your great-great-grandson coming to church and the pastor asking, how did you come to faith? And I want you to imagine your great-great-grandson saying, my journey to Christ didn't begin with me. It started with my great-great-grandmother. She was the first to commit her life to Christ, and then she raised my great-grandmother, who then raised my great-grandfather, who then raised my grandfather and my father, and now this father has raised me. This is a multi-generational faithfulness at its best. So here's the thing I want you to really think about. I want to challenge you a little bit this morning. Instead of waking up tomorrow, looking at your calendar, planning your food for the day, planning your meals, looking at your budget, you know, planning on what you're doing at work, planning on mowing your grass. I mean, these are things that we all do that are kind of ordinary and mundane. Instead of just thinking about those things and getting caught up into those things every day, I want you to ask yourself, what would it look like for my family 100 years from now? What would that look like? And what can I do today to help instill this faith in future generations? How can I start praying for 5 generations from now? Not just my kids and their spouse, and not just my grandkids, but what about 5 generations from now? I mean, that's a much bigger vision and picture than mowing your grass, right? And that's the vision that these men had at the very end of their lives. They had a forward-looking faith that anticipated what was to come for their future generations. But Jacob not only anticipated what was to come, he also finished well, just as Isaac finished well. Verse 21, by faith, Jacob, when dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph, bowing in worship over the head of his staff. There's debate about, was this the head of the staff or the head of the bed? In Genesis, it mentions at the end of his life, he's blessing them at the head of his bed. It could be either way, head and staff, or bed and staff are similar words in Hebrew. But the reality is if he's literally dying, and he's like on his deathbed, and he's got his cane and a walker, and he's just kind of hustled over and he can't see anything, it's saying here he's bowing in worship over the head of his staff or bed. And what I like about this picture of him holding on to the staff and blessing his 2 grandsons, William Lane writes this, Jacob's final act of worship, leaning upon the top of his staff, was characteristic for one who lived his life as a stranger and sojourner. In the face of death, laid claim to the future through the exercise of faith in the realization of the promises of God. In other words, I like this idea of him blessing them as he's leaning on a staff and worshiping the Lord, because the staff is a picture of him just living like his grandfather did, living in this land where he's a sojourner and he's anticipating heaven. But yet he's still saying, I'm ready for my heavenly home, but I'm also excited to know what's going to happen to future generations because they're going to be far better off than I am. And I praise the Lord for that. You see, what was happening here with Jacob as he's worshiping the Lord on his staff or bed at the end of his life, it's showing here that he had an attitude of worship all the way till the end. And just as Jacob, who was imperfect like you and me, had this attitude of worship in all seasons of life, so we are called to have a similar attitude of worship till we die. Again, stay the course, remain faithful, finish well. Isaac and Jacob, they both finished well, but what about Joseph? What do we learn about Joseph at the end of his life? Verse 22, by faith, Joseph at the end of his life made mention of the exodus of the Israelites and gave directions concerning his bones. As you're reading this, you're like, why does this matter? What in the world are we talking about here? Well, again, let's go back to the other two, his father and grandfather. They both had faith, and now Joseph has that same faith that was instilled in them when he was a child. And it's saying here, now he's reached the end of his life, and he talks about the exodus of the Israelites, and he told them to bury his dead body in the promised land. Now, how does that show faith? I'll tell you how it showed faith. Joseph was born in the land of promise in Canaan that his great-grandfather worked hard to get to. Okay, now he's there, and he lived there for 17 years. Some of you 17-year-olds are getting ready to go off to college. Well, Joseph wasn't going to college. He was sold into slavery at the age of 17 because his brothers were jealous of him. And they basically said, we want our brother dead. We want him out of here. And so they sold him into slavery. He ends up in Egypt, and he lives the rest of his life in Egypt, 93 years. So 110 years old, right, is when essentially he dies. But he lived there for 93 years in Egypt. But yet, as much success as he had from went to being a slave to the second in command of Egypt, he had a lot of success, a lot of wealth, a lot of money. He says, none of this really matters. Why? Because God made a promise to my great-grandfather that our people would not be in Egypt. They would be back in the homeland of Canaan, where I grew up, my boyhood years. And so I want my bones not to be buried here in Egypt, where I spent most of my life. I want them to be buried in my homeland, because that's the land of promise that God had for my family. And this is what he said to his brothers in Genesis 50. He said to them, I am about to die, but God will visit you and bring you up out of this land to the land that he swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. Then Joseph made the sons of Israel swear, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from here. You see, Joseph believed that one day his people would return back to their land, even though they were in Egypt at that time. And he trusted this, even though he wouldn't get to experience it himself. He anticipated it because God said that they would return there one day. You know, what I love about Joseph is that he did everything he could to preserve God's family from death. If you remember the story of Joseph, there was a big famine, and his people in their homeland, they were going to die out of starvation. And so they ended up going to Egypt because God put Joseph in this place of great power and influence, and he was able to save all this grain and food for a rainy day, or not rainy day, famine. And while his family started to die off, Joseph said, uh-oh. His family ended up coming to Egypt. He was able to keep them alive and preserve the promise of God. And he did all that he could so that his people could return home. I was reading this book this week, and I highly recommend it. It's called To the Tenth Generation by Ray and Janie Ortlund. To the Tenth Generation. And in that book, Ray Ortlund writes, everything done for Jesus pushes over dominoes that reach far beyond what we can see. Let me say that again. Everything done for Jesus pushes over dominoes that reach far beyond what we can see. A lot of you have played the game dominoes, right? And it takes forever to set up those little pieces in order. It just takes forever. And sometimes you make a mistake and you have to start all over. It's really frustrating. But when you get a long line of dominoes, what do you do? You push one, and then it hits the other one, and it hits the other one, and it goes faster until it reaches the end. What I like about this quote is, I want you to think about your life. Your job, just as Joseph's was, is to push the domino in front of you. Then their job is to push the next domino, and their job is to push the next one, and the next one, and the next one, and the next one, until you have greater impact. And all of a sudden, you see it going faster and multiplying. That's the vision that God has for each one of us as Christians. We are called to raise our children in the Lord. Now, God is the one to change hearts. We hope he does. But as he does, then they are called to raise their children in the Lord. Then they are called to raise their children. Domino effect. And that's what Joseph did. And we know that he had this hope that one day his people would return back to their land and they would see even more multiplication of believers in the Lord. And it took 400 years. Joseph had no idea it was going to take that long. 400 years later, God would have his people leave Egypt when they were enslaved, and they would journey through those arduous long years in the wilderness, and they would make it back to the promised land of Canaan. And Joshua, the conqueror, he leads the people into the promised land. And what does it say that Joshua does in Joshua chapter 24, the end of the book? As for the bones of Joseph, which the people of Israel brought up from Egypt, they buried them at Shechem in the piece of land that Jacob bought from the sons of Hamor, the father of Shechem, for 100 pieces of money. It became an inheritance of the descendants of Joseph. So what happens? 400 years before, Joseph said, hey, can you bury my dead body and my bones in the promised land? We know that Moses in Exodus 13, he took those bones of Joseph with him on the journey. And we know that in Joshua 24, Joshua completed the job by burying Joseph's body and bones in the land of Canaan. A promise fulfilled. Why does all this matter to you and me? Well, again, in this book, To the Tenth Generation, Ray and Janie Ortlund, they mentioned that they started praying not just for their kids and their kids' spouses, but they prayed for their future grandkids. And then they started praying for the great-grandchildren. And then they said, we're actually now praying to the 10th generation. You know what 10 generations adds up to? 200 years. So Ray and Janie Ortlund are praying literally for 200 years from now. That's wild. But why are they doing that? They said, well, just as we have the same God that our father Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph had, so we want to continue on that spiritual legacy. And you know what they did? They started doing some number crunching. And they said, well, we have been married for 50 years. And we have four children who are all believers by God's grace. And now they have four spouses that are all believers. That's 10 people right now in two generations that are believers. Praise the Lord. And they said, and now our four children have 15 total children, which gives us 15 grandkids. In three generations, if all of these grandkids come to faith, which we hope they do, they may not, but we hope they do, that's 25 new believers or believers in three generations. They said they ended up doing some math, just like compound interest, and you financial planners and accountants will appreciate this. They said, we did some math, and we learned about compound interest, and we said, if all of our children and grandchildren get married to believers and they have children, it'll come up to, in about 200 years, 55,000 people. Now, again, not all the 55,000 are going to be believers. Not all the spouses will be believers. Not all the kids will be believers. But even cut that in half. That's a lot of people. That's a lot of people that just two people influenced for generations to come. So again, please start thinking this way if you're not, especially as you're getting older. Start thinking this way. Instead of thinking, I need to have my lawn kept nicely. I need to have this meal planned out this week. All those things are important. I need to clean my bathroom. How about I need to pray for 10 generations from now. I need to see what God can do. That's big. That's a big picture. And that's the picture that God has given Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph, and he's given us today. The same could be said for you as it was for them. You know, Joseph had this forward-looking faith that was anticipating what was to come, but he also finished well. Again, in Egypt, he experienced a lot of success, a lot of power. He had a lot of money. He could have easily said, I don't want my family to go back to that podunk city, you know, or wherever it was in Canaan. I want them here in Egypt because they're experiencing success. They've got a lot of money here. We're good here. But Joseph didn't let any of that get to his head. Instead, he said, we don't need a land here in Egypt. We need to go back to where God wanted us. And he essentially lived like a pilgrim in a foreign land. But he finished well too. So all these men, they live like pilgrims in this world. And in this way, their faith demonstrated that their citizenship was in heaven, not in this world. But they also had strong faith as they had a concern to pass on a spiritual inheritance to their children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren and great-great-grandchildren, and then goes on and on and on. As you leave here today, some of you may not have children. Some of you may be single. And you might think, this doesn't relate to me. I would challenge you to think, yeah, it does. And here's how. This week we have about 160 kids that are coming to this church at VBS. We are called Christ's Covenant for a reason. We are a covenant community. And so this is a covenant project. This is a community project. Some of you may have kids that aren't believers. Keep praying for your kids that they'll come to faith. This message is designed for all of us to hear, whether you have kids that are unbelievers, whether you have kids that are believers, whether you don't have children, whether you're single. We all have a part in this much bigger picture to help rally around our children who are in this children's wing every week, and then their children after that. All of us play this role in God's bigger picture of passing down a spiritual legacy of faith for generations to come. Do we all want this place to be better left when we leave? A bit better off when we leave? Yeah, I would think all of us would want this place to be better. Well, what greater way to do it than invest in children in the next generation? So again, thank you for those that are really actively involved this week and the weeks to come. And I just encourage you to continue passing down this legacy of faith that God has richly given us.